Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Tom Waits giving out rusted harmonicas to any trick-or-treaters who visit him at Haunted Junkyard. Okay, that's not true. But it is a headline from the punk culture satire website The Hard Times, as is Pretentious Friend Only Listens to Podcasts on Vinyl. The Hard Times was co-founded by comedian Bill Conway and former SF Weekly music editor Matt Sankum, along with Matt's brother Ed, and it now boasts more than 2 million visits per month. Bill and Matt are in town for an event tomorrow night at the Brookline Booksmith, and they stopped by our studio. We started with the unexpected success of the site.
I think it was almost instantly surprising that we just figured we were kind of going to be making jokes for a couple of our friends, and then more people than our friends started paying attention to it, and we said, all right, well, I guess we'll keep doing this.
Yeah, I've never done anything successful before this. Yeah. All my bands were the type of bands where we'd go and we'd play for 30 people in basements and stuff, like here in Boston. We went on U.S. tours a couple times. We would travel the whole country and we'd make 100 new fans, and we go, wow. That's
some great. Only losing $400 and yeah. Be like, wow, we nailed this
we
one.
We nailed it.
All right, so now that you're so popular, does it make it scarier to be free with your humor and your content? Or are you just keeping it as real as it was when you were doing basement bands with music?
I think that we have a little bit of a separation between us and all of our readers. Like, we don't see them in real life very often. Sometimes we'll come to a music festival and they'll run up to us and show us a Hard Times tattoo on their arm and we'll be like, wow, that person's from Australia. There's a lot of reach here. But at the same time, it's still just Bill and I in our bedrooms writing jokes and stuff. So I do think that we're still as true as we ever were. It feels very normal still.
And we have a lot of contributors all over the country and various, you know, experience with DIY music or where they are. So their experience also becomes part of the website as well. And we as the editors really need to just focus that. So the outside voices really help with that. And so because Matt and I probably would have ran out of jokes a long time ago if we just had to mine our own experiences. But a lot of the contributors help with that.
You guys founded the website in 2014. A lot has changed since then, and not the least of which is the emergence of this concept of fake news. I have to believe it's very hard to do satire in the area of fake news. Is it harder either to get people to read the content, understand it in the right way, recognize it as fake in this new environment?
We had basically every big tech company go to war against us, and it felt very weird. Our traffic plummeted on our site about 70% overnight via several algorithm changes that were targeted towards fake news and disinformation and all that sort of stuff. And we really had to fight and claw and scrape to get our way back up there. But we're really lucky. We have a really dedicated, loyal fan base, and they helped us out a lot.
So when you say they went to war on you, at first I thought you meant they said, let's all go after the Hard Times. But what you mean is they were going after their algorithms that were allowing fake content to come forward and your business essentially suffered as a result of that?
Yeah, we got swept up in the, they just had a, you know, they didn't really care who they were affecting. They didn't want to put in the work to actually go after fake news and who's doing comedy, which we were, you know. And so a lot of the people that would follow us on social media, all of a sudden they weren't seeing our stories anymore for no reason of their own. And then they'd be like, wait, the Hard Times is still around? You know, like a year later, like, yeah, we've been busier than ever. But
yeah, you can check the metrics. And it used to be maybe 3 or 4 years ago, we would put out a joke and if it was a good joke, about 2 million people would see it on Facebook. And now the same sort of joke, about 100,000 people will see it. So it's not just a small incremental change that they made.
That's a huge change.
It's a very, very big choke that they put on us. And then they want us to pay money to get over the choke, but it's very expensive and we don't have that money. So we say no. So we had to go find new ways to get to our audience.
So your audience, it's interesting to me because the focus of your satire is essentially the punk scene. Okay, let's go back to 2 million hits a month, the punk scene. I didn't even know the punk scene was big enough to garner that. What makes it ripe for satire and why are people finding it so funny?
You know, we have expanded out quite a bit past our early roots. I like to think of it now as it used to be jokes about things that were going on at a DIY basement show. Now it's jokes from people who go to DIY basement shows, but maybe it's about society at large. So I do think that some of our traffic and some of our users are from that world. We also expanded out into video games. We have a vertical called Hard Drive, and we have a satirical presidential candidate called Ace Watkins that's very popular, and that makes up a bulk of our traffic too. So it's not just 2 million hardcore kids with hard times tattoos on them. It is growing to be a more and more diverse audience.
Talk a little more about Ace Watkins, who is funny, and why you decided to do that and why skewer politics.
Yeah, so that all started with Jeremy Kaplowitz, who was the... So Matt and I have been kind of run the hard times side of our website, and early on, we kind of pinpointed, like, where can we also expand, like, what markets aren't being served with these jokes. And the video game nerd culture market was one that we looked at early on. So we looked into our contributor pool that we already had people writing for us and thought, like, who would be good for this? And there was one guy that stood out, Jeremy Kaplowitz, who had created his own comedy properties, but he's been heading up Hard Drive at the editorial, and he just, I don't know, threw that presidential candidate out as a joke one day, and it kind of just started to stick. And
can you describe Ace Watkins a little bit?
He's the first gamer running for president. He believes that there needs to be RGB lights underneath the White House. He's played by Phil Jameson. a YouTuber, and he's just held his first presidential rally in New York.
He cracks me up.
He's got like 170,000 Twitter followers and growing every day. He's overtaken many actual presidential candidates in social media engagement. we're all in for Ace Watkins.
So if he accidentally makes the next debate stage, is he going to show up?
I think they need to start counting IGN polls in order for him to get in.
So one of my favorite headlines as I was preparing to see you guys is from an article a couple of years ago called Punk Dad Can Still Hang Maybe Next Friday Between 5 p.m. and 8 p.m. or potentially two Saturdays from now, but only during the day. And Matt, that makes me think about what you were saying about this broader audience who's living in society and experiencing this tension between who you want to be and you want to think you still are, and who life is actually making you be.
Yeah. But who wrote that one?
I think it's Randy Labasso that wrote that one, if I'm not mistaken. And yeah, that speaks to a lot of our demographic is kind of the people that have, you know, not aged out of punk or anything like that, but just real life is kind of more in the way where work and responsibilities of parenting, but you still have that connection. And so those jokes like that, like the office punks and the punk parents really tend to hit with a lot of people.
You guys have really, in a way that's quite specific and distinctive, committed to making sure your freelancers are your priority, committed to making sure that they get paid. Bill, I think you stayed part-time until quite recently, and you've even released a platform for paying freelancers that puts a priority on them getting their income quickly. Mm-hmm. That is not industry standard. Why are you
We're trying to make
so...
it a standard.
Yeah, it seems like you are, and I noticed in our conversation today how mindful you're being about talking about your contributors. Why is this such an important part of the way you're running this business?
I think it comes back down to, you know, so when you grow up in a punk scene, you get these ethics embedded in you in a weird way, and you bring those into adulthood, and that's just kind of how you live your life. And so, like, being part of a community is always a big thing. But Matt comes from the journalism world, and paying contributors was a priority from the start, where when we didn't even have money coming in, we're still paying contributors whatever we could pay them. And yeah, like you said, I worked part-time at the Hard Times for the first 4.5 years of the site, working in warehouses and then going home and basically doing a full-time Hard Times job at night. And but thankfully now I'm full-time with the Hard Times. But that paying of the freelancers was such a priority because we wanted to reward the people that put in any time for any stupid thing we wanted to do. We wanted people to feel respected and that their work was valuable. And that was always very important from the start. And we actually pushed other publications to start paying their contributors in a certain way.
Well, I was going to ask that. Are you changing the industry?
I think that we're the second highest pay rate for satirical writing on the internet. And a lot of other people gave up when those big dips happened in the algorithms. I know Above Average and Funny or Die were going after satire for a while, but they gave up. And yeah, you know, I think that it's just a little bit who we are. I went through the journalism world And I wrote a couple of super viral articles as a freelancer, and I got these calls from my publishers or from editors being like, man, this is incredible. Can you write another one? This is the biggest hit traffic piece we've had all year. And I thought to myself, that's great, but I only got $35 to write this thing. I had to go pay for the parking myself. I took the photo myself. It was all my work that went viral. How about I am the guy who gets paid when the work goes viral? And so once we went from being... Bill worked in a warehouse. I worked as a reporter. Once we went from being like the underlings up to the bosses, we wanted to try to change a little bit about how bosses treat underlings. So we actually, the freelance payment platform that we built, it's called Outvoice. And what it does is it allows publishers to pay their freelancers as soon as they hit the publish button. So there actually isn't a publish button on Hard Times. There's a publish and pay button. And as soon as the article goes live, the writer gets a notification, the payment gets sent out, and it all gets perfectly tracked for tax season. There's actually a lot of other things that we did at Hard Times that are very unique for freelancers. We built a community for our freelancers, and we make sure that they understand what direction the magazine is going in and what our objectives are. They have monthly get-togethers. There's groups based on locations. There's like a Hard Times LA group. There's a Hard Times New York group. They do comedy projects together. So we're trying to help freelancers build their networks of creative people, get paid on time, get respected, use Hard Times as a launching off platform.
So I have to ask you, as the uninitiated, those things that you just laid out sound like a good way to run a business, and a way that develops your people and helps them develop themselves. As an uninitiated, that doesn't sound very punk to me. So draw, you know, connect the dots. Seriously, connect the dots for me. You are guys who grew up going to basement DIY punk shows in subcultures all around the country, and now you're running this enlightened, web-based, cutting-edge moral business in the gig economy, and I need you to connect the dots.
So, punk does have a deep, like, there's, you know, you might have the view of a punk as like somebody that's, like, throwing up on the sidewalk and, you know, spitting in your face or something.
Nihilistic.
Actually, for me, it's mostly Green Day, because that's who my kid is into.
Okay, sure.
Green Day likes our website. We just sent them a book.
Awesome.
But a lot of it, so there's a lot of, you know, a lot of times in punk, like, certain moral values are in punk first, and then they get mainstream, like a call-out culture, like the Me Too movement. Kind of started in punk 2 or 3 years before it became like a mainstream thing. There was a lot of people calling out banned people in power and stuff like that. And, like, you know, veganism and, like, all that runs deep in the punk world. So
I don't think people know that.
Yeah, and so these sort of things of being a community, and it's all deeply ingrained in the punk. So the initiated know that these things, like, a lot of punk shows are charity drives and stuff like that that help, you know, feed homeless people. But, you know, you just see a bunch of people moshing at a show and you think it's violent and weird or something like that. But it's often very altruistic.
All right, I want to play a quick cut of a song from the book release album. It's called Can Punks Even Read Though? I Really Hope So. We Just Wrote a Book.
I hope punks can read. Yeah, I hope punks can read. Because we just made a book.
Okay, so you poke a lot of fun at the people whose scene you're still connected to. I've read an interview where you even expected to maybe get beat up some for that. How is this really intense scene doing such a good job, having such a good sense of humor about you poking fun at them this way?
I think most people get the joke in that we are just having fun with it, and that there are some, we have seen people, you know, if we write a headline that affects them, they get upset about it or whatever, but it would take a lot of effort for somebody to find us and beat us up. So I think that's really what it's all been. It's the
only
way.
Stay hidden.
Too hard.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a journalist, I was on a conference or a press call with Carrie Brownstein from Portlandia, and she said something like, well, we aren't making fun of people who we aren't a part of these communities. We're making fun of ourselves, and that's why it's okay. And I thought about that a lot, and I had a contributor, Bobby. Someone was having a conversation about punching up or punching down, and he said, you know, a lot of times with Hard Times, it's just a bunch of punks running in a circle punching each other, right? It's just a big circle pit. We do that for fun. And so I think that because, I mean, punk was the first type of music I liked. You know what I mean? I just trying to mimic my older brother, and he got me into it. And so my entire life is in the punk community. So if I'm making fun of punks, it's not like some random person just spitting down on someone.
We're not the jocks making fun of punks. You know, we're the punks. We mentioned we're both straight edge. A lot of the articles we write are most harshly reflective of straight edge people, you know?
So like, it's sort of like you're allowed to make fun of your own family, just no one else.
Yeah. It's like the, what was that, the blue collar comedy tour? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
It's like the blue collar comedy tour.
We are the Jeff Foxworthy.
Yeah, here's your sign. Is that punk? Here's your sign.
All right. That was Matt Sankum and Bill Conway, co-founders of The Hard Times. Matt and Bill will be at the Brookline Booksmith tomorrow night at 7. You can find more information at our website, radioboston.org. So stay with us. Coming up, now that we've seen the numbers, is Elizabeth Warren's Medicare for All plan realistic? We'll dig in and we'll take your calls. I'm Ticiana Deering. This is Radio Boston.